Chapter 3. So Ivan Ilyich lived for 17 years after his marriage. He was already a public prosecutor of long standing, and had declined several proposed transfers, while awaiting a more desirable post, when an unanticipated and unpleasant occurrence quite upset the peaceful course of his life. He was expecting to be offered the post of presiding judge in a university town, but Hap somehow came to the front and obtained the appointment instead. Ivan Ilyich became irritable, reproached Hap, and quarreled both him and with his immediate superiors, who became colder to him, and again passed him over when other appointments were made. This was in 1880, the hardest year of Ivan Ilyich's life. It was then that it became evident, on the one hand, that a salary was insufficient for them to live on, and on the other, that he had been forgotten, and not only this, but that what was for him the greatest and most cruel injustice appeared to others a quite ordinary occurrence. Even his father did not consider it his duty to help him. Ivan Ilyich felt himself abandoned by everyone, and that they regarded his position with a salary of 3,500 rubles as quite normal and even fortunate. He alone knew that with the consciousness of the injustices done him, with his wife's incessant nagging, and with the debts he had contracted by living beyond his means, his position was far from normal. In order to save money, that summer he obtained leave of absence and went with his wife to live in the country at her brother's place. In the country, without his work, he experienced ennui for the first time in his life, and not only ennui but intolerable depression, and he decided that it was impossible to go on living like that, and that it was necessary to take energetic measures. Having passed a sleepless night pacing up and down the veranda, he decided to go to Petersburg and bestir himself, in order to punish those who had failed to appreciate him, and to get transferred to another ministry. Next day, despite many protests from his wife and her brother, he started for Petersburg with the sole object of obtaining a post with a salary of 5,000 rubles a year. He was no longer bent on any particular department, or tendency, or kind of activity. All he now wanted was an appointment to another post with a salary of 5,000 rubles, either in the administration, in the banks, with the railways in one of the Empress Maria's institutions, or even in the customs, but it had to carry with it a salary of 5,000 rubles, and be in a ministry other than that, in which they had failed to appreciate him. And this quest of Ivan Ilyich's was crowned with remarkable and unexpected success. At Kursk, an acquaintance of his, F. I. Line, got into the first-class carriage, sat down beside Ivan Ilyich, and told him of a telegram just received by the governor of Kursk announcing that a change was about to take place in the ministry. Peter Ivanovich was to be superseded by Ivan Simonovich. The proposed change, apart from its significance for Russia, had a special significance for Ivan Ilyich, because by bringing forward a new man, Peter Petrovich, and consequently his friend Zakhar Ivanovich, it was highly favorable for Ivan Ilyich, since Zakhar Ivanovich was a friend and colleague of his. In Moscow this news was confirmed, and on reaching Petersburg Ivan Ilyich found Zakhar Ivanovich, and received a definite promise of an appointment in his former Department of Justice. A week later he telegraphed to his wife, Zakhar in Miller's place. I shall receive appointment on presentation of report. Thanks to this change of personnel, Ivan Ilyich had unexpectedly obtained an appointment in his former ministry, which placed him two states above his former colleagues, besides giving him 5,000 rubles salary and 3,500 rubles for expenses connected with his removal. All his ill humor towards his former enemies and the whole department vanished, and Ivan Ilyich was completely happy. He returned to the country more cheerful and contented than he had been for a long time. Praskovya Fedorovna also cheered up and a truce was arranged between them. Ivan Ilyich told of how he had been feted by everybody in Petersburg, how all those who had been his enemies were put to shame and now fawned on him, how envious they were of his appointment, and how much everybody in Petersburg had liked him. Praskovya Fedorovna listened to all this and appeared to believe it. She did not contradict anything, but only made plans for their life in the town to which they were going. Ivan Ilyich saw with delight that these plans were his plans, that he and his wife agreed, and that, after a stumble, his life was regaining its due and natural character of pleasant lightheartedness and decorum. Ivan Illich had come back for a short time only, for he had to take up his new duties on the 10th of September. Moreover, he needed time to settle into the new place, to move all his belongings from the province, and to buy and order many additional things, in a word, to make such arrangements, as he had resolved on, which were almost exactly what Praskovya Fedorovna too had decided on. Now that everything had happened so fortunately, and that he and his wife were at one in their aims and moreover saw so little of one another, they got on together better than they had done since the first years of marriage. Ivan Illich had thought of taking his family away with him at once, but the insistence of his wife's brother and her sister-in-law, who had suddenly become particularly amiable and friendly to him and his family, induced him to depart alone. So he departed, and the cheerful state of mind induced by his success and by the harmony between his wife and himself, the one intensifying the other, did not leave him. He found a delightful house, just the thing both he and his wife had dreamt of. Spacious, lofty reception rooms in the old style, a convenient and dignified study, rooms for his wife and daughter, a study for his son, it might have been specially built for them. Ivan Illich himself superintended the arrangements, chose the wallpapers, supplemented the furniture preferably with antiques, which he considered particularly comme il faut, and supervised the upholstering. Everything progressed and progressed, and approached the ideal he had set himself. Even when things were only half completed, they exceeded his expectations. He saw what a refined and elegant character, free from vulgarity, it would all have when it was ready. On falling asleep, he pictured to himself how the reception room would look. Looking at the yet unfinished drawing room, he could see the fireplace, the screen, the whatnot, the little chairs dotted here and there, the dishes and plates on the walls, and the bronzes, as they would be when everything was in place. He was pleased by the thought of how his wife and daughter, who shared his taste and this matter, would be impressed by it. They were certainly not expecting as much. He had been particularly successful in finding, and buying cheaply, antiques which gave a particularly aristocratic character to the whole place. But in his letters he intentionally understated everything, in order to be able to surprise them. All this so absorbed him that his new duties, though he liked his official work, interested him less than he had expected. Sometimes he even had moments of absent-mindedness during the court sessions, and would consider whether he should have straight or curved cornices for his curtains. He was so interested in it all that he often did things himself, rearranging the furniture, or rehanging the curtains. Once when mounting a step, ladder to show the upholsterer, who did not understand, how he wanted the hangings draped, he made a false step and slipped, but being a strong and agile man he clung on, and only knocked his side against the knob of the window frame. The bruised place was painful but the pain soon passed, and he felt particularly bright and well just then. He wrote, "I feel 15 years younger." He thought he would have everything ready by September, but it dragged on till mid-October. But the result was charming not only in his eyes, but to everyone who saw it. In reality it was just what is usually seen in the houses of people of moderate means, who want to appear rich, and therefore succeed only in resembling others like themselves. There are damasks, dark wood, plants, rugs, and dull and polished bronzes, all the things people of a certain class have in order to resemble other people of that class. His house was so like the others, that it would never have been noticed, but to him it all seemed to be quite exceptional. He was very happy when he met his family at the station, and brought them to the newly furnished house all lit up, where a footman in a white tie opened the door into the hall decorated with plants, and when they went on into the drawing room and the study uttering exclamations of delight. He conducted them everywhere, drank in their praises eagerly, and beamed with pleasure. At tea that evening, when Praskovya Fedorovna among other things asked him about his fall, he laughed, and showed them how he had gone flying and had frightened the upholsterer. "It's a good thing I'm a bit of an athlete. Another man might have been killed, but I merely knocked myself, just here. It hurts when it's touched, but it's passing off already, it's only a bruise." So they began living in their new home, and which, as always happens, when they got thoroughly settled and they found they were just one room short, and with the increased income, which as always was just a little some 500 rubles too little, but it was all very nice. Things went particularly well at first, before everything was finally arranged, and while something had still to be done, this thing bought, that thing ordered, another thing moved, and something else adjusted. Though there were some disputes between husband and wife, they were both so well satisfied and had so much to do that it all passed off without any serious quarrels. When nothing was left to arrange, it became rather dull and something seemed to be lacking, but they were then making acquaintances, forming habits, and life was growing fuller. Ivan Ilyich spent his mornings at the law court, and came home to dinner, and at first he was generally in a good humor, though he occasionally became irritable just on account of his house. Every spot on the tablecloth or the upholstery, and every broken window, blind string, irritated him. He had devoted so much trouble to arranging it all that every disturbance of it distressed him. But on the whole his life ran its course, as he believed life should do, easily, pleasantly, and decorously. He got up at 9, drank his coffee, read the paper, and then put on his undress uniform, and went to the law courts. There the harness in which he worked had already been stretched to fit him and he donned it without a hitch. Petitioners, inquiries at the chancery itself, and the sittings public and administrative. In all this the thing was to exclude everything fresh and vital, which always disturbs the regular course of official business, and to admit only official relations with people, and then only on official grounds. A man would come, for instance, wanting some information. Ivan Ilyich, as one in whose sphere the matter did not lie, would have nothing to do with him, but if the man had some business with him in his official capacity, something that could be expressed on officially stamped paper, he would do everything, positively everything he could within the limits of such relations, and in doing so would maintain the semblance of friendly human relations, that is, would observe the courtesies of life. As soon as the official relations ended, so did everything else. Ivan Ilyich possessed this capacity to separate his real life from the official side of affairs and not mix the two, in the highest degree, and by long practice and natural aptitude had brought it to such a pitch that sometimes, in the manner of a virtuoso, he would even allow himself to let the human and official relations mingle. He let himself do this just because he felt that he could at any time he chose resume the strictly official attitude again, and drop the human relation. And he did it all easily, pleasantly, correctly, and even artistically. In the intervals between the sessions he smoked, drank tea, chatted a little about politics, a little about general topics, a little about cards, but most of all about official appointments. Tired, but with the feelings of a virtuoso, one of the first violins who has played his part in an orchestra with precision, he would return home to find that his wife and daughter had been out paying calls, or had a visitor, and that his son had been to school, had done his homework with his tutor, and was surely learning what is taught at high schools. Everything was as it should be. After dinner, if they had no visitors, Ivan Ilyich sometimes read a book that was being much discussed at the time, and in the evening settled down to work, that is, read official papers, compare the depositions of witnesses, and noted paragraphs of the code applying to them. This was neither dull nor amusing. It was dull, when he might have been playing bridge, but if no bridge was available it was at any rate better than doing nothing or sitting with his wife. Ivan Ilyich's chief pleasure was giving little dinners, to which he invited men and women of good social position, and just as his drawing room resembled all other drawing rooms so did his enjoyable little parties resemble all other such parties. Once they even gave a dance. Ivan Ilyich enjoyed it and everything went off well, except that it led to a violent quarrel with his wife about the cakes and sweets. Praskovya Fedorovna had made her own plans, but Ivan Ilyich insisted on getting everything from an expensive confectioner, and ordered too many cakes, and the quarrel occurred, because some of those cakes were left over, and the confectioner's bill came to 45 rubles. It was a great and disagreeable quarrel. Praskovya Fedorovna called him a fool and an imbecile, and he clutched at his head and made angry allusions to divorce. But the dance itself had been enjoyable. The best people were there, and Ivan Ilyich had danced with Princess Trifonova, a sister of the distinguished founder of the society Bear My Burden. The pleasures connected with his work were pleasures of ambition, his social pleasures were those of vanity, but Ivan Ilyich's greatest pleasure was playing bridge. He acknowledged that whatever disagreeable incident happened in his life, the pleasure that beamed like a ray of light above everything else was to sit down, to bridge with good players, not noisy partners, and of course to four-handed bridge with five players. It was annoying to have to stand out, though one pretended not to mind, to play a clever and serious game, when the cards allowed it, and then, to have supper and drink a glass of wine. After a game of bridge, especially if he had won a little to win a large sum, was unpleasant, Ivan Illich went to bed in especially good humor. So they lived. They formed a circle of acquaintances among the best people, and were visited by people of importance and by young folk. In their views as to their acquaintances, husband, wife and daughter were entirely agreed, and tacitly and unanimously kept at arm's length, and shook off the various shabby friends and relations who, with much show of affection, gushed into the drawing-room with its Japanese plates on the walls. Soon these shabby friends ceased to obtrude themselves, and only the best people remained in the Golovin set. Young men made up to Lisa, and Petrushchev, an examining magistrate and Dmitry Ivanovich Petrushchev's son and sole heir, began to be so attentive to her, that Ivan Illich had already spoken to Praskovya Fedorovna about it, and considered whether they should not arrange a party for them, or get up some private theatricals. So they lived, and all went well, without change, and life flowed pleasantly.